ACATRA Foundation presents the ACATRA Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of ACATRA AI. So imagine if your whole life, everything, the highs, the lows, was actually one big experiment.
Like a laboratory for discovering truth.
Exactly. Well, today we're diving into the life of someone who quite literally called his autobiography The Story of My Experiments with Truth. Mohandas Karamchand Gandhi.
It's such a significant work, isn't it? And his story, I mean, it's just incredibly relevant even today, why we should still be talking about him.
Absolutely. This isn't just a history lesson. We're looking at how this initially quite shy lawyer transformed himself and arguably the world through this relentless quest for truth.
Right. And how his personal journey, his integrity became this engine for massive social and political change. It's a powerful idea.
So let's get into it. Where does this journey, these experiments really begin?
Well, like most of us, it starts in childhood. We're talking Porbandar, Rajkot, in Gujarat. And the sources really emphasize his mother, Putlabai.
Ah, yes. Her influence seems immense.
Definitely. Her deep religious devotion, the vows, the fasting, it wasn't just background noise. It really instilled in him this deep sense of self-discipline and an early feel for nonviolence right from the start.
And it's fascinating how honest he is, even about his childhood. No glossing over things.
Not at all. He talks openly about, you know, trying meat, smoking, even a bit of petty theft. Small things, maybe, but the key is his self-reflection.
He doesn't just confess, he analyzes.
Exactly. He looks at the inner turmoil these things caused him. It sets up this pattern for his whole life. Radical honesty, self-examination, learning from mistakes.
That's a powerful foundation.
Yeah.
And then there's his marriage. Very young.
Yes, arranged marriage to Kasturba at 13. He admits he was quite possessive initially, like a typical young husband of the time, perhaps.
But that changed quite dramatically, didn't it?
It really did. Over time, it evolved. She became this incredibly strong partner in his work, his mission. He even called her his first Satyagrahi, someone committed to that truth force. That evolution in their relationship, it kind of mirrors his own growth.
Okay, so from Gujarat, the next big step is London. Seems like a huge leap.
A massive leap. Off he goes for legal training. And this is where you see that real struggle for identity play out.
The whole English gentleman phase.
Uh-huh. Trying to fit in, taking lessons in dancing, elocution, the violin, even buying fancy clothes. You can almost feel the tension, can't you? Western education versus his Indian roots. Who am I?
It's very relatable, that search for identity in a new environment.
And interestingly, it's a promise he made to his mother that really anchors him.
Yeah.
The vow of vegetarianism.
Right. That wasn't easy in Victorian London, I imagine.
No, but sticking to it led him somewhere unexpected. He found London's vegetarian community, these intellectual circles, it wasn't just about diet anymore.
It became a way to connect values, find like-minded people.
Precisely. And it sparked his own independent experiments. He starts seriously reading religious texts, Edwin Arnold's translation of the Bhagavad Gita, the Song Celestial, the Bible.
So that vow, that seeming constraint, actually opened doors.
Exactly. It pushed him towards a deeper personal search for truth, exploring different spiritual paths. You see the seeds of his later pluralism there.
Okay, so London shapes him. But then comes South Africa. You mentioned this was the real crucible.
Absolutely. He actually failed to get his legal career going back in India initially, which is what leads him to take a job in South Africa. Sometimes failure points you where you need to go, eh?
Definitely. And then comes that incident, the train.
Pietermaritzburg, 1893. Thrown off a first-class carriage even though he had a valid ticket, just because of his skin color.
It's hard to overstate the impact of that moment.
It was visceral.
Yeah.
Humiliation, injustice. But instead of running away, he spends that cold night on the platform and decides. He decides to stay and fight.
That's the shift. From personal insult to public mission.
Right. Fighting what he called the deep disease of color prejudice. And this is where Satyagraha is born.
Truth force. Holding onto truth. How did he actually develop that?
Well, it's this amazing blend, isn't it? His sharp legal mind combined with that deep spiritual searching. It wasn't just protest. It was a whole new methodology.
A methodology for social change.
Yes. Ethical, strategic. Mm. Aimed at awakening the opponent's conscience, not crushing them. Using love or truth force to convert, not coerce. It's fundamentally different.
And he didn't just preach it. He lived it. The communal settlements.
Phoenix Settlement, Tolstoy Farm, these were like laboratories for his ideas, practicing simplicity, self-sufficiency, nonviolence in every aspect of daily life, living the philosophy.
Integrating the personal and the political completely.
Which brings us nicely to digging into those core philosophies, the how behind it all. Let's start with truth itself, Satya.
For him, it wasn't static, was it? Not some dogma.
Not at all. It was a continuous search, an ongoing experiment. He famously said, "Truth is God," meaning the pursuit of truth is the highest spiritual practice. It's about seeking, not claiming you possess it.
That keeps it dynamic, open to learning.
Constantly, which is maybe why he could lead for so long without becoming rigid. And then there's ahimsa, nonviolence.
Which people sometimes mistake for passivity.
He argued fiercely against that. For him, ahimsa was active, courageous love. It takes more strength than violence, he believed.
Strength to restrain, to convert, not just react.
Exactly. And it had to be practiced in thought, word, and deed, aiming to change hearts, not just win arguments or battles.
And this connects to his idea about self-purification, right? That internal work is necessary for external change.
Absolutely fundamental. You can't effectively change the world, he thought, without first working on yourself, conquering the ego, the desires.
So all those experiments with diet, celibacy, brahmacharya.
Right. And brahmacharya for him was broad self-control over all senses, channeling that energy. Simplicity, service, all designed to reduce the ego's grip and make space for selfless action.
It really breaks down that wall between private morality and public life.
Totally. Your personal integrity fuels your public effectiveness, which leads straight to his famous line.
My life is my message.
Precisely. Actions have to align with beliefs. It's not enough to talk about truth. You have to live it in your economic choices, your relationships, everything.
That consistency is powerful. And this extended to a social vision, too. Sarvodaya.
Yes, inspired by Ruskin, Sarvodaya, the welfare of all, not just the majority, but everyone, especially the most vulnerable.
And that led to Swadeshi. Self-reliance.
Directly. Swadeshi was the practical application. Self-reliance, economic independence. Symbolized, of course, by the spinning wheel, the charka.
Which was more than just symbolic. It was practical economics, too.
Oh, absolutely. Empowering villages, providing work, uniting the nation in a common activity, challenging colonial economic structures. It was genius on many levels.
And underpinning all this was his view on religion.
Deep religious pluralism. God has no religion, he said. He studied the Gita, the Bible, the Quran, finding common ground.
Seeing different paths to the same truth.
Yes. Advocating for unity, respect across faiths. Incredibly important then, and maybe even more so now.
Okay, so we have these core principles. Let's look at those moments where they were really tested, those pivotal turning points. We've mentioned Peter Maritzburg.
Yes, 1893, that train incident. It truly forged his resolve, turned personal humiliation into a lifelong fight for justice. A lawyer became an activist.
Then a very personal one, the vow of brahmacharya in 1906.
Hugely significant, deciding on celibacy to conserve all his energy, physical, spiritual, for public service. Again, it's that idea of complete self-mastery.
It wasn't just about sex, was it? It was broader control.
Much broader. Control over all senses, channeling that immense personal energy outwards. It gave him kind of moral authority, this deep personal integrity visible to everyone.
And the third turning point you highlighted is quite striking, calling off a major movement.
Ah, yes. Charichara, 1922. He'd launched the massive non-cooperation movement. Huge momentum for independence.
Things were really building.
They were. But then an incident of violence breaks out. Protesters kill police officers, and Gandhi, he calls the whole thing off, stops the entire national movement.
That must have been shocking to his followers.
It was baffling, infuriating for many. They were so close politically. But for Gandhi, the means mattered. Nonviolence was absolute.
He wouldn't compromise on the principle, even for political gain.
Exactly. The means were the ends, in a way. It showed his unwavering commitment, his willingness to prioritize the purity of the method over immediate results, a profound act of leadership and self-correction.
That commitment is incredible. So after these experiences, especially in South Africa, he returns to India in 1915, ready but also cautious.
Very much so. His political mentor, Gokhale, gave him wise advice. Spend a year just traveling, observing, listening. Don't jump straight into politics.
So he took the time to really understand India firsthand.
Yes, immersed himself in the realities of the country. And then he started applying his methods, honed in South Africa, to local issues.
Starting small, or rather local.
Right. Shimpiran, 1917. investigating the exploitation of indigo farmers. Patient investigation, then civil disobedience. It worked. The oppressive system was abolished.
Linkada.
1918, leading a tax revolt for peasants whose crops had failed. Again, Satyagraha in action, securing justice.
And the Ahmedabad mill strike. That involved his first public fast, didn't it?
Yes. Also 1918, he fasted to rally the striking workers and, crucially, to appeal to the mill owner's conscience, showing the power of self-suffering as a tool for change.
So these local campaigns built credibility, demonstrated his methods worked in India, too.
Exactly. They laid the foundation for his national leadership, for the larger non-cooperation movement, for promoting Swadeshi nationwide with the Charka. The journey was, in a sense, complete, but the experiments continued.
So bringing this all together, what are the human lessons here for us today? What can you take away?
Well, first, that idea of treating your own life as a laboratory. Can you practice that kind of radical honesty? Admit mistakes, examine your own motives without judgment, just curiosity.
That experimental mindset for personal growth.
Definitely. And Satyagraha, it offers such a different way to approach conflict. Not about winning, but understanding. Seeking to convert, not defeat. Think about applying that empathy in your own disputes.
Moving from confrontation to connection.
And what about self-control, brahmacharya, in our hyper-distracted age?
That feels incredibly relevant. Mindfulness about consumption.
Yes, food, media, stuff, maybe even a digital detox now and then. It's about reclaiming focus, inner discipline. It's not just denial, it's about creating space.
And for anyone leading others, even in small ways.
His model of servant leadership, leading by example, taking responsibility, prioritizing the well-being of those you serve. That's timeless wisdom.
True accountability.
And finally, resilience. Viewing hardships as, well, opportunities.
Yeah.
Focusing on the purity of your actions rather than fixating only on the outcome.
That frees you up, doesn't it? Reduces the anxiety about results you can't always control.
Exactly. It builds that inner fortitude. Like he said, be the change you wish to see in the world. Start with yourself.
Powerful stuff. Okay, let's try to distill this into three final takeaways. What's the key emotional insight?
For me, it's understanding that spiritual growth and social action aren't separate tracks. They're intertwined. Changing the world genuinely starts with that difficult, lifelong work of changing yourself.
The inner and outer journeys are one.
Got it.
And the intellectual insight.
It has to be the profound connection between means and ends. The methods you use fundamentally shape the outcome. You can't achieve a peaceful end through violent means, for instance. It forces a shift from just focusing on results to focusing on the integrity of the process.
The how determines the what. Makes sense. And finally, a universal, practical life lesson.
I think it's that ordinary people, like Gandhi initially was, can achieve extraordinary things by aligning what they believe inside with how they act outside. Holding on to truth and nonviolence really can transform even the toughest situations. It's about that alignment and faith in principles.
Inner conviction matched with outer action. Brilliant.
So we've really dug deep into the story of my experiments with truth, haven't we? From his early life, the honesty, the struggles, to the leader, and the enduring philosophies.
It's been quite a journey. So the question for you, listen, is, what experiment with truth might you start today? What principle feels ready for you to test and explore in your own life?
Definitely something to reflect on, and maybe even pick up the autobiography itself.
Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.